Big show for you here today. It is time. It is our wide receiver prospect deep dive part one with Ray Garvin. Yes, we're doing a two-parter because this wide receiver class is so deep and so interesting. Ray joins me to break down some of the top wide receiver prospects in this year's NFL draft class. Who's our wide receiver one? Is it Mekhi Lemon? Is it Carnell Tate? Is it Jordan Tyson? Is it somebody else? We talked through tons of players at the top of this class. Plus, Omer Cooper Jr., we break him down. Yes, but he also joins me for a great conversation and interview at the end of the show. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball, and it's a big day to talk ball because it is part one of our wide receiver prospect preview, and as he does here every Thursday on the show, joining me to talk a little ball, it is our guy, Ray Garvin. Ray, what's going on, buddy?
Matt, 3 weeks, man. 3 weeks. The NFL draft is literally this month. It's in a couple of weeks. I get to talk wide receiver prospects with you. I was just saying in the pre-show, sometimes I wish I haven't seen some of the charting that you've done because I want to come on here and act like I don't know how you feel about certain guys, but I'm sure talking through these players the way that we are today, going a little deeper than just some of the surface level stuff, we'll probably uncover some things we didn't know about these guys from one another. So I'm excited to do this show, man. We love the receiver position. We both look at it from a different lens and a different viewpoint. I think both very effective. So to talk about those things today, I think a lot of people will get something out of this one, man.
No question. I'm really excited about that too, especially because like you said, we come at this from a little bit different ways in terms of the wide receiver position where reception perception is really trying to isolate the player from the surrounding variables, try to really view the receiver in, like I said, in isolation. Who are they apart from their role, apart from their scheme? Of course, trying to quantify role, obviously, that's a big part of it. But that's something that, Ray, you do from a usage standpoint with the Trinity that's really valuable as well. So I think that what you do is really great too because, you know, you're not just looking at like one single individual data point because that's not the best way to prospect with data is bring the full picture in. So I would say that as we go through these top seven wide receiver prospects today, we're going to really help the people get a full picture of who these guys, if you come away from this show and feel like you don't have a full picture of who these prospects are, I guess like go back to the beginning, re-listen to it again, because we're going to cover these guys from every which angle here.
Yeah, man, it's the game, right? Like, you love the game of football. I truly love the game of football and knowing and understanding that there's so many things that go into player success. They absolutely have to have the capability and the skill set to do the job, to execute the function, right? But you still need a team of people around you to help get the most out of that role, right? I don't want to just execute and then not get a good result. You want the things to be right in your environment to allow you to continue to get the opportunities to execute at a high level in an efficient spot. So just take it's that's football. That's the whole game. It ain't golf. It's not tennis. It's not 1v1. There are a lot of things that go into play in order for receivers to have a level of success, whether that's moderate or exceeding expectation.
Yeah, the reason I want to isolate wide receivers from surrounding variables so much because those surrounding variables really matter when it comes to putting up production, putting up fantasy box scores, as the folks listening to this show really want here. So again, we're going to fully dive into the top seven prospects according to NFL.com today. As I mentioned, there's going to be a part two of this where we go a little bit deeper into the class, but the seven guys we are going to be talking about here today, Jordan Tyson, Mekhi Lemon, Carnell Tate, KC Concepcion, Denzel Boston, Chris Brown, and Omer Cooper Jr. Plus, the aforementioned Omer Cooper Jr. is going to join me for an interview later in the show. It's a great conversation. I think you guys are really going to enjoy hearing Omer break down some of his game, what he thinks his strengths are as well. So awesome conversation. But before we dive into these players individually, Ray, kind of talk to me about your view of the wide receiver class as a whole. We know that every year, like, it's going to be a deep wide receiver class. There's going to be a lot of, I think, till the end of time, that's pretty much going to be true here. It's really been true both in foresight and in hindsight the last, I would say, 5 years like we've had a deep wide receiver class, even if going into it, it's like, well, it's not that good. It ends up actually producing a ton of really good players. So tell me where you kind of classify this group of wide receivers, maybe in relation to some of the past classes. Like, is this a good class? Is it a great class? The class as a whole, 2026, what's your view of it?
Yeah, I think this is a class where you have a little bit of everything, right? I think there is every archetype of wide receiver in this class. Now, the caliber and the talent of that wide receiver, I think there's a big range, right? There's some better ones, and then there's some more risky bets towards the bottom. But if you're looking for a big outside wide receiver, you got him in this class. If your team's offense needs a quick yak guy, speed guy out of those short area routes, that exists as well. You've got your vertical threats. You've got your route technicians. The real question, Matt, that people are asking is, how good are they really, right? Are they being propped up because of the whole class as a whole isn't that good? Or are these truly first round talents, top wide receivers? So what I would say, I would sum this class up is, I think we are going to look back 5 years from now at this class, and there are going to be some really good NFL players, right? Some really good assets to NFL teams. I don't know that we'll look back and be like, man, we got some real game changers at the position for fantasy, right? I think some of them can be really good role players, really good complementary assets for a fantasy roster. But I where I sit today, I don't look at this class and say these guys are going to sort of change the landscape of the wide receiver position, more so as if they hit a spot, they might fill a really good need and a role for us in this game we play. But I think it's a good wide receiver class, not great.
I think that's probably the best. If you wanted to give it the quick summary, it's good, not great. I think if I was to answer the question, I would say there's no blue chip, you know, Malik Nabers. Obviously, again, he's had mixed results in the league, but like a Marvin Harrison Jr. type, where you are taking this guy in the top five and the top six picks in any NFL draft, like that 2024 wide receiver class. Again, there's been some mixed results in the league, but it was a very good, very, very good class coming in. And we had three guys go in the top 10. We will not have three guys go in the top 10 of this class, and it's definitely not even of that quality of just class as a whole. Like that was a very good draft class in 2024 in general. This year, there's not quite that blue chip guy, but I do think it's deep. And when I say it's deep, by the way, I think there is a little bit of a, you gotta make a distinction between when we're talking about fantasy football and real life football when we talk about wide receivers in this way. Because when we talk about like it's a deep wide receiver class for real football, like, yeah, there's a lot of contributors who could make NFL rosters who, if called upon, could take a lot of snaps for a team. That doesn't mean it's going to be deep with, as you said, fantasy difference makers. Now, the good news is I do think the guys who are going to go in the first round in this class, to me, Ray, there is some comparison to like the 2023 wide receiver class, where, you know, Jaxon Smith-Njigba, to me, at least in that class, was in a tier by himself. But then there was Zay Flowers, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnston, who did go in the same range as JSN. I just had JSN ranked above those guys from a tier perspective. But like JSN did become that fantasy difference maker because everything clicked in the third year. And I think for some of these guys, yeah, we might not have them emerge as wide receiver ones immediately, but who's to say 3 years from now, like, we don't have a JSN type player from this class because everything sort of came together. We don't have a Michael Wilson from that 2023 class that, oh, in the like his third year, just environment came together. He was a good NFL player. He hung around and then boom, he was really, really good for people in fantasy down the stretch. So a lot of it comes down to circumstances and where they're going to get drafted, which of course we don't know now, but part of that is uncovering who these guys are as skill position players. So let's get into these guys individually, and let's start with Jordan Tyson. I am very curious to talk with you about Jordan Tyson. Ray and I have not, other than seeing each other's contents and tweet and stuff like that, we have not compared notes on these guys at all. So very excited to break this player down in particular, Ray, because I'll throw Jordan Tyson to you with this. This is the guy that I think I have the consensus round one players, I have the most trouble figuring out who he will be in the league. So I'm curious where you view Jordan Tyson. Kind of give us your breakdown of him as a player.
Yeah, coming into the season, looking at summer scouting, what he did last year, he was my wide receiver one coming into the season. And I just want to put people back in that mind frame of August, September. Mekhi Lemon was not viewed as the number one wide receiver in this class. He wasn't even viewed as the number one wide receiver on his own team coming into the season. That was Jacoby Lane, okay? So coming into the year, Jordan Tyson, I was like, this is my guy. Playmaking ability, yak. You just see him take over games in adverse conditions because his quarterback play was shaky at best, and that's putting it nicely. This past season, right, some of the same things that have plagued Jordan Tyson sort of showed back up again. Like the injury stuff. I know people keep wanting to, is it fluky? Regardless of how it happened, like it happened and it has impacted the game. It's impacted how he can play on the field. I think he's pretty doggone good. Okay. I thought Jordan Tyson was really good last year. I think he was good this year. Sam Levitt and Jeff Sims, not good quarterbacks. He's got to stay on the field. He runs all the routes. He could run everything on the field. I think he's an easy separator, especially off of the line if you don't press him. I think he's a really good receiver. Again, coming into the year, he was my one, but that's not where he ended up once we got through the season and I got through the tape.
Yeah, and he's not my wide receiver one either. I think I totally hear your point about the 2024 film, because when I went back and charted him, because of course he had injuries this year, I had to incorporate some 2024 film into his evaluation, and like, I thought he was much better in 24 than in 25, just me personally.
Yes.
And so there's a lot to unpack with that. Where is that because he was playing through injuries this year, you know? Is he dealing with that hamstring injury throughout the course of the hamstring injury, by the way, that as of April 2nd, when we are recording this, is currently still dogging him to the point that he didn't work out at the combine. He didn't work out at Arizona State's pro day. He's hoping to do something before the draft. Like, is it that hamstring injury that was affecting him on the field? Is that a part of it? Or are the injuries already, you know, starting to line up for a guy like this, already starting to take something away from him? That's a question you have to ask. But there are obvious pros with him. I mean, when he is just got a one cut route and isn't dancing and wasting motion at the top of it, because I do think he does that, he really can separate well. He's very fluid. He's very smooth. I think the route running has a ways to go. Like I said, I think that he wastes a lot of motion at the top of routes, and that can be really frustrating for him, especially when he's going against press coverage and man coverage. But he's one of the better zone beaters I've charted over the last few years. Good sense of when to settle down. I just think, Ray, when you're talking about a guy like this, I kind of compared him to Amari Cooper, and that's like good and bad, obviously, because Cooper was a great NFL player, but he definitely had some frustrating moments. I mean, you know this as a Cowboys fan. He would like disappear for long stretches, and I think Tyson could be that type of guy too, that's maybe a little overrated as a route runner, but if you use him in the right way, he can really be a high-end separator. So he's an interesting player to break down because there's just so many things at play here.
Yeah, and in my usage model in Trinity Score College, he's clearly in the tier two. He's not in the first tier players. And if you're just talking about that year three, you said Jackson Smith and Jigba year three, we looked at some, you know, Michael Wilson, year three. If he's drafted in the early first round, just based on other players around his usage score coming out, Matt, he's got about a 19% chance to be a 1,000-yard receiver in year three. So that's just looking strictly at usage and other players who have done what Tyson did coming out. If he gets the capital, he's got about a 20% shot of being a 1,000-yard receiver by year three. I think scheme is going to matter for him as well. He was good early in his career, which is also good to see. So college is just, it's tricky, man. And that's why even usage-based metrics is really difficult, because it's hard. That translation from NFL, from college to the NFL, it's just a different ball game.
When you say scheme is going to matter a lot for him, do you think, because this has been a thing I struggled with until kind of, like I said, I chart three games of a guy and be like, all right, I got it. Like, I know who this guy is. I'm going to finish out the sample, of course, but I kind of have a sense of where I think he should be, you know, where, like, what role he should play in the NFL. For Tyson, it really kind of took the entire sample for me to come down on my answer here. But when you talk about scheme, is there kind of a role or maybe an offense that you'd envision he would be best in?
Yeah, I think an offense like San Francisco would be phenomenal for him. In a Shanahan offense where they create a lot of yards after the catch for the wide receiver. It's just how they run it. Anybody who's out there, whether it's Jennings to Ayuk to Kittle, You're getting yards after the catch. Obviously, a Sean McVay offense in the Rams. I think he was mocked there today. Getting your player moving across field. He's really good on those crossing routes. I think he would be fine in that department as well. I don't think you want him lining up outside and saying, go get it, you know, in Miami at 11. I don't think he's that type of receiver to do that right away. I'd probably try to move him around a little bit. I'm at pretty low. When he was pressed at a high rate in college, very low success at that for Jordan Tyson.
Yeah, I've got him at a 30th percentile success rate versus press in reception perception. That was by far the weakest thing in his profiles. Yep. When you get hands on him, the physicality of it, like that's it. That is an issue. Yep. I don't think that means, because again, like I said, he's the best zone beater that I've charted in this class. He's one of the better zone beaters I've charted in any recent class. I think that doesn't necessarily mean he's got to be like a slot receiver, but you kind of want him being, to me, like that movement Z receiver who you talked about in some of those offenses where you mentioned they'll get him off the line of scrimmage. They'll get him, you know, moving pre-snap. I think about, yeah, obviously this is a different offensive tree, but like the way that see the comp on the screen here from Hayden Winks about Jerry Jeudy. There is some Jerry Jeudy-ness to him. I think Jerry Jeudy, Amari Cooper, they're like in the same bucket of wide receivers, but the way that Jeudy had success, and frankly, the way that Amari Cooper had success at times with the Cowboys was as that movement Z receiver. Don't be doing the dancing on the little slant routes or anything. Just one cut go on an over route, a dig route, a post route off play action. And when you just let, like, just, hey, Jordan, we're just one cut, put your foot in the ground and go. He can create a lot of separation in that way. So there's a lot of systems I think that he could fit. He's someone that I just think will be a volatile prospect because he's younger. That's good. Like, could he get better? For sure. But the injuries make him volatile. I think some of the usage makes him volatile. Like, it does a team look at him and see the frame and everything and see like more of an X receiver? To me, I think that would be up and down in terms of the production there. So he's definitely the guy I think is among the consensus. Would you say, I would say at least among the consensus round one guys is probably the riskiest pick, but there's certainly a reward there.
Yes. Yes, 100%. Coming into it, Matt, I had him as my one, but everything when I sat down and when I charted these guys, when I looked at them, when I graded them, when I ran my stuff through, like he's not one or two for me. So if you're thinking about the ones that are being mocked in round one, I think he would be the riskiest, and I'd be really curious on where he lands. Right, like 16 of the Jets. I don't feel great about that. I don't feel great about that. Just throwing him on the, like, you know, so. I'd want to know where he lands too.
Right. I mean, the Jets kind of have the best version of this archetype of player in Garrett Wilson. And I don't want to see those two guys like kind of overlapping, you know, in that way. So, all right, let's get to another one of the guys that is likely going to go in the first round. USC's Mekhi Lemon, he of the Biletnikoff Award winner this year. Mekhi Lemon, give me your scouting report on the USC product here.
I've got to hold my smile and my USC bias here, but it's a really good player. He had an incredible season, and I just want to reiterate the point. Coming into the year, he was not the guy projected to be where he's at right now. It was universally Jakobi Lane. Mekhi Lemon came into USC as the original Travis Hunter. He was a defensive back, played defensive back at USC, and then made the full transition over before having a little mini breakout last year and seeing what we get now. But man, he's a yak machine. He's a running back playing wide receiver. He's crafty. He recognizes zone. He doesn't just recognize zone. He sits down and embraces the contact. His hands are outstanding. He's not dropping passes no matter how hard you hit him, how high, how low. I think he's a little better of an athlete than given credit for, but not a great athlete, if that makes sense. And I don't care about the 40-yard dash at the pro day. I'm talking about the movement skills on the field, right? I'm just going to say it. He's a slot player. That's what he is. Some people look at 12 personnel and usage, and they're like, oh, he played the outside. I'm like, no, they ran majority twins, and he was the inside slot receiver when they were in 12. Like, he's a slot receiver. Go back to 2024. He played on the outside more, but he was also faster in 2024. And it's not even a question. If you look at his tape in 24 to 25, there is a difference in speed on field when you see it. I think he's a good receiver. I think if I told you this, Matt, let me ask you and the people this right now. If I told you Mekhi Lemon was going to have 86 receptions, 1,219 yards, and 6 touchdowns one season in his career, how would you feel about that?
I mean, I think that'd be great. Like, that'd be a good outcome for him.
If I told you the next season he'd give you 90, 1,100, and 2 touchdowns, you'd still feel pretty damn good about that. Like, man, we're getting up. We've got something here. Maybe that's Robert Woods, and that's who I compared him to, and people hate it. People hate it. That's back-to-back seasons of Robert Woods in Los Angeles, and then he did it almost again the next year in less games, right? But because I don't want to give him Jackson Smith and Jigba, which he's not, people think people are hating on him. He's number one in my Trinity model, best Trinity score for all college players. He's got a 33% chance of being a 1,000-yard receiver by year 3, which is great. Those are great odds. Number one in the model, number 2 on my board. I think he's awesome. I don't think he's Jackson Smith and Jigba. I don't think he's damn Amon-Ra St. Brown. And that shouldn't be the end of the world if you don't agree with that comp.
No, yeah, I think that's definitely a guy that you would still take in this draft, especially in the first round. I have him as a clear first round player. And it's funny, like, obviously he's 5'11", 192 pounds. We just talked about Jordan Tyson, 6'2", 203. I could tell you with certainty which one of those guys is a more physical football player, and it's Mekhi Lemon, like, without a doubt.
Yes.
Like, we met, both these guys can get yards after catch. One of the guys breaks tackles, the other one does not. Mekhi Lemon absolutely does break tackles with the ball in his hands, even if he's not the most explosive player in the world. And you wonder at 192 pounds if some of that will transition, you know, to the next level and everything like that. But yeah, I think he is a very high floor player. And Ray, while, you know, you talk about Robert Woods, like, is that the most high ceiling comp? The thing that I come back to with him is that he so clearly does fit into whether we think he will be Amon-Ra St. Brown or he will be Puka Nacua or Jackson Smith and Jigba. Like, this is the archetype of receiver that he does belong to, like a guy that can be inside out. I mean, yeah, he is mostly a slot player. He was 68% slot in the games that I charted for him, but like, he does win against man coverage to the point that I think, like a St. Brown, maybe he starts out as a pure slot in his early days and then becomes more of a Z and 12 personnel. Like, he's not one of these guys that's going to lose playing time in two receiver sets, in my opinion. And I think, because he's so smart against zone coverage, because he's so fearless going over the middle of the field, he attacks the football well, great hands. Like, that's the archetype of receivers that are the most productive in the modern game, which is why I think he doesn't look like the traditional top 15 pick at wide receiver, but where that game is heading right now, from a play style standpoint, he certainly fits in that regard.
When you have these guys that went after the catch, that are physical, that are able to break tackles, what you want to avoid, and what I've learned, Matt, is you want to avoid the ones where that's all they do, right? All their production is on yak and short area stuff, and they don't do anything down the field. They don't do anything down the boundary. They don't do anything over the middle of the field. Even operating out of the slot, he does have boundary reps where he's winning. There are plays over the middle of the field. He does it short. He can command all three levels of the field, and that's the diff. That's why the yak part of his profile doesn't scare me as much, because, yeah, he, some of it is contested catch stuff, and you're like, okay, are you going to be able to get away with that at your size at the next level consistently? But he can play down the field, even if it's just inside. It's much different than the pure just yak guys get it to him, and they jitterbug their way to yards. It works in college. That doesn't work in the league. He's got a way better profile overall than those kind of receivers.
Oh, yeah. He is without a doubt, you know, real receiver, right? He's not one of these manufactured touch players. I looked at since the 2021 season, guys who went in the first round who had, like I said, he was about 68% slot snaps for me. These are the guys that have had a 68% or slot higher rate that went in the first round among players that I've charted since 2021. Emeka Ibuka, 73.6%, Jackson Smith and Jigba, 83%, Treylon Burks, 68%, Kadarius Toney, 77%. That is a pretty big spectrum, you know, where it's like JSN on the high end. Emeka Ibuka, I think, will be kind of like, him and Ibuka are pretty similar players, you know, and then there's like, he's definitely not even close to what, you know, Burks or freaking Kadarius Toney were. Those are the guys we're talking about that don't win on their own. Yeah, this guy wins on his own to the point that I think he can be, Yeah, will he be an alpha 150 target type player? You know, that does kind of depend on his individual growth and also where he lands. And Ray, that's kind of my closing thoughts here on Lemon, is that I don't have him ranked as my number one either, but would it surprise me if he's the most productive player from this class? No, but it's going to depend on where he lands ecosystem wise. Yeah. Like, I think he has the highest production upside because of the meta that the league is at right now, but that is going to depend on situation and what style of offense that is.
Nailed it. And the scary part about that is Browns, Saints, Dolphins, when you're thinking about Jets, there are all these spots where we will be changing up some rankings after draft night based on some of the landing spots.
I do think he'd fit well in that Saints offense, actually. That was the only one on the list where I was like, I could get, I mean, obviously they have Chris Olave. I think those guys actually would kind of complement each other. That's the type of offense, Ray, that I think it would be good for him to land in, because they play with a lot of spread concepts where he would get a lot of true slot reps. And even reps like Olave had some slot reps that were also, you know, kind of blurring the line between what is a slot, what is not.
You didn't say Cleveland.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. Every other thing that you said there, Jets, Dolphins, friggin' Cleveland. Like that. Everything else there makes me a little bit nervous.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree.
All right, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to talk about Carnell Tate, Casey Concepcion, and several other top receiver prospects in this class. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're continuing to talk wide receiver prospects. Part one of our prospect preview, of our prospect deep dive here with Ray Garvin. Let's talk about Carnell Tate, the latest in a long line of really awesome wide receiver prospects to come out of Ohio State. Ray, what's your view on Carnell Tate relative to this wide receivers class?
Yeah, this was a player where it was almost the reverse for me. Coming into the season, I was like, there's a lot that I need to see based on what I saw in 2024. And I had him as like wide receiver 4 or 5 coming into the season. I was like, I need to see the growth from Carnell Tate. And that absolutely happened this year. He took a step forward in his game. He's an awesome player. I think everybody sees the highlight reel stuff down the field, the way he is vertically. Not a lot of opportunity there this year, only 66 targets, but he caught 51 passes, right? And he kind of gets dogged out for the play versus Miami. And I'm just like, every now and then a receiver drops a ball or alligator arms it. You hate to see it, but that doesn't define a player. He's got the best sideline awareness in this class, and it's not even close. It's not even close. You could look at some of the advanced metrics. They are very high, 3 yards per route run. You know, there's so much to like. The size, I think the athleticism is just fine for the role in which he'll probably occupy. 4.53 is fine. Second highest usage score in my model. This was a 5-star prospect that gets knocked because he's playing alongside what people will say is the best wide receiver prospect we've seen maybe ever. And I'm not using that to be clickbaity. People will say that next year about Jeremiah Smith. And you want me to dog him out and hold candle, you know, to his ass because he had 875 yards and 9 touchdowns? That's great. Like, to be as productive as he was, he had multiple stretches where they both said, this is 1A, 1B here. We are both top dog alphas, 100-yard games, sideline awareness is through the roof, contested catchability, fluid in his routes. Big fan of Carnell Tate. I think this is a very good player. My wide receiver 1 in the class.
My wide receiver 1 as well, and said this really just throughout the process since I started to get a look at these guys, is that, yeah, a player like Jordan Tyson maybe has a higher theoretical ceiling. Mekhi Lemon, I think, could have a higher production ceiling if he landed in the right spot. But Carnell Tate fits, and no player's bust proof, of course. Obviously, he could not work out. But the player that he is fits all 32 NFL offenses. Like, every offense needs a guy who can line up on the perimeter and run big boy routes and catch the freaking football. And that is what Carnell Tate does. Runs a very vertical route tree. Awesome hands. Like in the games I charted, his contested catch rate is absurd. Did not drop a pass officially all of last year. He is just like a very aesthetically pleasing player to watch catch the football because he has like pristine technique. He attacks the ball with like fully extended hands, smoothly brings it in. He to me is like a blend of George Pickens at the catch point, but Calvin Ridley as a route runner and more of like Calvin Ridley's frame, like a length, 6'2", under 200 pounds. He's not the fastest, but he's very smooth. Mm-hmm. He runs routes extremely well, gets in and out of his breaks. 89th percentile success rate versus man coverage and reception perception. That's a top seven mark since 2021 when I launched the website. Obviously, I was charting prospects before that, but I kind of just look at the guys since 2021 to sort of give more recent comparisons. So top seven since then. Very, very good player at beating man coverage. Don't have a ton of reps of him facing like hard press necessarily. I kind of want to hear you unpack your thoughts on that. But when he faced press coverage, he was pretty good. It's just like that means, is he going to be more of an X or is he like a ZX hybrid? Because a lot of the way he attacks the football and runs vertical routes, you'd probably want him to be that on ball X receiver. What are your thoughts on how he kind of fits into a role in that way?
Yeah, that's so funny that you said that, because I kind of came up with like a usage coverage kind of metric, just nothing that's brand, just to look at some things, right? And it's called estimated press success rate. 53rd percentile. So it's like, you're right, right? He didn't face it a lot. He's fine. It's incomplete. And when you, the bigger thing is, Matt, when you watch the flow of the game, because Jeremiah Smith is there, there's some weird things in coverage. And there's some things that look like press that really aren't. There's some easy releases for him. I think he can. I absolutely think he can win versus it. But it is something that he'll have to answer at the next level. It's not as clearly defined as maybe some other receivers. And I'm with you. My comparison was George Pickens. As soon as I saw him, I was like, oh, this is a little more fluid version of GP. GP may have had maybe more raw athletic ability. Like he was just a dog from day one at Georgia. But that was my thought. But I see Nate Tice compared him. I'm looking at this to Reggie Wayne. And I'm like, you know, I could see that as well. And Wayne was kind of like that number two for a while next to Harrison. But when you needed him to step up to be a one, he was able to do that as well.
Yeah, he's just so, so technically refined. But I think what people maybe discount him as, like in terms of the upside case for Tate, is that the guy just turned 21 years old in January. And he's already very good and very technically refined. But I think because, let's be honest, like he's kind of got a little bit of an old man face and he runs that like 4.5, you know, and he's under 200. I think this is a guy who could fill out his body. And I think actually he's not the most powerful player against press necessarily, but he's got a good willing. He almost needs to get better footwork wise, but he's got a really good like arm bar against press. He's very aggressive, like swatting defenders away from him. So I think actually he could get more athletic and stronger at the next level. Cause like I said, he's only 21 years old and has like a very, he's got long arms, long lean frame. I could see him maybe filling out more as he gets to the NFL level. And if that happens, yeah, then we're talking about a guy that in year three, year four is ready to announce himself as more of a number one receiver.
Matt, I mean this with no disrespect whatsoever, right? Because everybody's got, they're entitled to their opinion. You've got your own scouting eye. I really don't know how you can just watch Mekhi Lemon, Carnell Tate, Jordan Tyson, just watch them play and come away thinking anybody other than Carnell Tate's the best receiver in this class. It is it to me. What, it's that evident that this is a guy that I think, like you said, all 32 teams need a guy like that. There's more upside than given credit for. He's incredibly young. He does have this kind of that guy at 24-hour fitness, you know, that doesn't look like he should be able to hoop as good and move as good as he is, but he's smooth. And he's got sure hands. I think he's a little better after the catch than people give him credit for, right? Is he going to wiggle and break you down? No, that's not his game. No. But when he's moving in the open field, he can get to a corner. Strider. He can run away. Like, yes, he's a strider. this is a very good wide receiver. Wide receiver one for me. And I just think watching all these guys, I don't know how you come away with anything other than Tate is the best complete receiver in this class.
I agree. Carnell Tate is my wide receiver one in this class. We're on the same page there. Jordan Tyson, not my number two. Mekhi Lemon, not my number two. My number two in this class is the next guy we're going to talk about here, which is Casey Concepcion. I love this player, Ray. I think he is fantastic. I think he is just so good. I think he is in line with what teams will look for in terms of an explosive playmaker. But I mean, this guy lines up on the outside and wins on big boy routes, demolishes press man coverage, 196 pounds at 6 feet. Like, he came in with better size than honestly I was worried. I was like, oh God, this is going to be another one of those 5'10", 5'9", 185 jitterbug bros. And no, this guy came in at 6 foot, 196 pounds. And like, thank God, because I don't think he looks small on tape, but was just a little bit worried about that. So I'm a huge fan of Casey Concepcion. We'll talk about the drops. We'll talk about that. That's the biggest concern for him, no question about it. But I'll tell you what, Ray, my take on KC is that if he didn't have some of the ball skill questions and the drops, I would think he's like a tier one receiver. That's how high I am on this guy.
So I'm just smiling because we are in lockstep, right? I'm a big fan of KC Concepcion, fourth highest usage score in my model, in my Trinity model for college. Very good percentages for him if he gets the requisite capital. I think he's the most versatile weapon at the receiver position in the class, right? So right off the rip, he'll be that team's punt returner right away, probably returning kicks the way that thing is set up. But he's good at all three levels, right? PFF graded him elite to great at all three levels, deep, intermediate, and short, which goes to your point. He's a true wide receiver. He's not a gadget guy. He's not a slot guy. You talk about his size, right? I went to the Miami Texas A&M game and I'm looking at Reuben Bain and doing all this stuff. And I tweeted it out that day. I was like, man, Casey Concepcion's way bigger than I thought he was. Like, I'm looking at him. I'm like, man, I thought he was going to be a short. So I kind of wasn't even worried about that, right? Come the process, because mm-hmm. I was scared. I was like, man, is he like 5'8", 5'9"? And when I saw him, I was like, man, he's a lot bigger. And I tweeted it out, way bigger than I thought he would be. So for him to officially measure in at that size, and listen, the quarterback play at Texas A&M was good to get them to the college football playoff, but I would not say that that's the caliber of quarterback we'll be talking about being a high-end talent come 2027. He's very good. Good after the catch, much like we said with Mekhi Lemon. He's not just a slot guy, right? He can play at all three levels. We'll talk about the drops, et cetera, et cetera. But I just want to remind people, this was like a Debbie Darling his first year at North Carolina State. People were very excited mm-hmm. about him his first season at North Carolina State. So this isn't a guy that just came out of nowhere. It's just, thankfully, the college process allows these guys to go find situations and systems that fit them better. And for him to come into the SEC and be that guy, and they already have another good wide receiver there in Craver, who we'll talk about next year, Concepcion is, as you see on the screen, a baller, man.
Yeah, no question, a baller. You mentioned the NC State, where he was good at like 18 years old. He had 40 rush attempts that year. Connor Rogers made the point for our show at the Combine that, yeah, you're not giving a guy that's like a little tiny wallflower player 40 carries, you know, like, and some of those are true, like, carries, not little jet sweeps or anything like that. So that's another thing, too, that it's like he's a guy who can handle some of the gadget stuff, but he was a real deal receiver last year at Texas A&M in every sense of the word. 78.3% success rate versus man coverage in reception perception. Only four players have been better than that since the 2021 NFL draft class. Those four players are Jalen Waddle, Elijah Moore, Devontae Smith, and Travis Hunter. Okay, and like three of those guys went the top 10. Only Hunter and Smith were predominantly outside receivers. And only one of those guys, Smith, played in the SEC. Obviously, Hunter, a little lower level of competition there in that Colorado offense. So I think a very impressive number for Casey Concepcion. He clearly is, like, he's a great route runner and a great separator, where I think he's a much more like detailed technician than a guy like Travis Hunter was at the collegiate level. Just a lot to really like about him. On the drops, though, that's something that's got to get fixed, of course. Like, there's no question about that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Can we just say that? I've got no excuse for him, right? You got to catch the ball, man. Like some of those,
yeah.
You need to catch the damn ball, Casey. No excuse. Catch the ball.
And I think it is a blend of some focus issues and some like technique issues where he claps at the ball, which you can't do. Like he's got, I think he's a good ball tracker and he's really good in contested situations. Like there are plays on tape of him going against big boy corners in the SEC, in the Notre Dame game as well, where he makes plays above the rim. Like he can track the ball well. I don't think he has bad ball skills. He is a little sloppy with the technique at times. I don't think it is a debilitating issue for him necessarily. It's something that can get better. Like drop rate is not a sticky stat. So no excuse, like the ball's in your frame, catch it. But it is something that it's the thing that I think keeps him from being like a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. So we are discounting him in that way, but I don't think it's usually something for a player that does everything else well that will crush his NFL career.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I haven't compared to Julian Edelman. I think similar frame, the way that they work the middle of the field. Edelman can do a lot of different things. Return guys, Swiss
but he's
Army
so much faster. He's so much faster than a guy like Julian Edelman, though.
Well, you know, but that's how they play and the role in which they occupy. Like yeah. we could argue about the physical skill set and all of this, but going into the NFL. He's not Jamar Chase, right? He's not going to be that kind of guy. I think he can be like an Edelman. And you look back at some of those years and he's 1,100 damn yard. Like, I think that's the role in which he occupies for a team.
Yeah, no question. Edelman was a guy, obviously, who played some Z receiver for those Patriots teams when they went into more 12 personnel with the two tight ends there in New England. So, yeah, I like that comparison from a deployment perspective. I'm very high on Concepcion. It's good to hear that Ray is as well. Let's just catch the football, brother. You catch that football. Okay. We're gonna be talking about a lot of production at the NFL level. I think he's going to go a lot higher than people think, and I think that's something that I've just kind of come around to over the course of the process. But we are going to take another quick break. We come back. We've got more wide receiver prospects to talk through. We're going to get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We've got more good wide receiver prospects to talk through because there's so many interesting players in this class. Let's talk Denzel Boston out of the University of Washington. Ray, this is a guy who's got a wide range of opinions. I see people that are really high on Boston. I see people who are kind of out on the Denzel Boston profile. Where do you come down on the Washington wide receiver?
I like him. I like his game for what he's probably going to be asked to do at the level. I think he's a really good receiver. I talked about Carnell Tate and how dominant he was at the catch point, sideline awareness. I think Denzel Boston would be like, hey, I would like a word with you, Mr. Garvin, because my sideline awareness is equally as good. And I am just as dominant on the boundary and on the outside. A lot of his routes are vertical routes, much like Carnell Tate. He's definitely not the athlete that Tate is. There is some separation data on him, 18th percentile separation in the target and 14th percentile catch separation. So he's winning late, probably not winning right off the line of scrimmage. In the red zone, he's just an absolute animal. 11 red zone touchdowns in his career. I've got him compared to Courtland Sutton. I like Denzel Boston. I do not dislike him. Do I think that he is somebody you want profiling as your one right away, throwing him out there in the X receiver role? Absolutely not. I think he can play big on the inside. I really do. People didn't think Courtland Sutton was going to be what he was coming out of SMU. In round two, I think he can play big on the inside. I think he can play the other opposite of the X, the Z position. But I like Denzel Boston, and he still fits inside that Trinity tier of good historical outcomes as long as he gets the capital. Like, selfishly, like an ideal spot outside of San Francisco at the end of the first. If the Raiders at the top of the second round, they get Fernando Mendoza a weapon, and that weapon is Denzel Boston. I think that'd be an excellent landing spot for him. I know Besh is there. I know Thornton is there. But I think he would compete for targets in that offense. I like Boston.
Yeah, I like Boston too. And the Courtland Sutton comp, I've kind of got him in that same family of wide receivers. You know, 72 point, like you mentioned the separation data. I definitely disagree that I think he's a little bit better separator than that. It like kind of against zone coverage because he's not the fastest player for sure. He didn't test before the combine, did not run a 40-yard dash, which I am not surprised. I don't think it would be the fastest 40 in the world. Like I've said it at the when I first started charting, I was like, there's definitely some Bud Light Mike Evans in his game because of how long he is and the long strides. But he doesn't have the straight line speed of a guy like Mike Evans whatsoever. And because of that, he definitely struggles to separate and untangle on the vertical routes. But I think that was true of guys like Drake London, like Tetero McMillan, like Cortland Sutton, like Michael Pittman. And I think that's the family of wide receivers that he belongs to. Boston 72.5% success rate versus man is actually sandwiched between Drake London and Tetero McMillan. I think McMillan's full profile, his success rate versus zone, his hand, like he was a better prospect than Boston, no question. I think Boston's more of a late first type, early second. McMillan was definitely a better prospect, but just family of wide receiver wise, I think we're in the same place of where he belongs. And yeah, like he's a guy that I wouldn't just stick out at X receiver and have him be a sacrificial player. A lot of the routes as we're showing on the screen here right now, like the in-breakers are some where he really does like throttle down and create some separation, is much snappier at the top of routes than you thought. And I think teams that want to move a big wide receiver around, you know, kind of like what the Texans did a little bit with Jaden Higgins last year, who again, I think is the lower end range of this kind of family of wide receivers. Yeah. You can get a lot of success on those in-breakers there.
Yeah, that's good. That is on the lower end range. And that's why I said he's big, but he can play inside. I think you can move him inside. I think you can move him around the different spots. And I know it's just a one rep sample size, but when I'm looking at a 6'4", 210-pound wide receiver take punts to the crib, like,
yeah, he's a
good
move.
Player. Once he gets going, and again, you watch Cortland Sutton. Do you ever watch Sutton and be like, man, this is the best athlete I've ever seen? Nobody says that when you watch Cortland Sutton play. You're like, he does a good job at doing what he does, right? You're not looking at Sutton to be pleased aesthetically. What's he do, though, well? When you think about Sutton, what's he doing well? Crazy contested catches down the field. Big-time red zone touches and getting opportunities in the red zone. Using his size, mossing people. Head top, as the kids say, Matt Harmon. I got a 9-year-old. Head top when you get caught on in the end zone like that. That's Denzel Boston. Like, don't. I'm not putting him in a. I'm not putting him in Jamar Chase range. He's not in Malik Nabers range. He's not. No, it's not what I need him to do. I think he can be one of those other guys. Absolutely. I don't get the hate for him. I like Denzel Boston.
Yeah, the Cortland Sutton comparison is good. You know, like I said, with last year, I kind of compared Tetero McMillan to a blend of Cortland Sutton and Michael Pittman, and I think this is just a step down from that. But still, again, in the same family of wide receivers, McMillan was just much more smooth and loose at that size, whereas Boston, I think, is more like powerful and just more straight line-ish in that way. Just different style, a little tighter of a player, different styles, but yeah, very good player that I think could go in the first round. He could go to the early second round. If he goes to one of some of those teams in the early second round, you mentioned the Raiders, even the Titans, like clearly need a perimeter wide receiver. It's one of those, like, does he end up going to the late first round to maybe more of a crowded wide receiver room? Like, you know, San Francisco, you pointed out, he could be like Mike Evans's heir apparent. Or does he go to a team that has like a clear need for an outside receiver?
Can I give you? Can I give you one in round? Can I give you one in round two?
Yeah.
Can I give you a spot in round two? At pick 9, the Kansas City Chiefs, they get a defensive end. Okay. At 30, they take a cornerback. They pick at 40. They pick at the top of the second round. What if they take a Denzel Boston at 40? At not at 9, not at 30. They get him in the second round, top of the second round, pick 40.
That'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. He could work some of the intermediate stuff that they need. They need somebody with size and the ability to beat man coverage. That is what Denzel Boston's the type of receiver they've needed forever. I have been trying to wish cast them Carnell Tate at the 9th pick because that's just like, yeah, you drop that in and you're ready to go. But this is a good backup plan if you go with an edge rusher at 9. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Just want to throw that one because they got the capital, right? They maybe not at 9. They're not taking Denzel Boston, but maybe they go DB at 30, but at the top of the second, they're like, we need an X. Like, that's clearly the best X of Mike, what would be left at that time.
All right, let's go to the next prospect here. This is Chris. This is Chris Brazel. I'm very fascinated at how you feel about Chris Brazel out of the University of Tennessee, as I've called it on the show over the years. I think Charles McDonald actually was the one who said it first, and I've co-opted the term, the Looney Tunes offense at the University of Tennessee. Obviously, we're not going to helmet scout the guy, but it does matter that he's coming from what is one of the goofier offenses at the collegiate level. So you can take it as he's another USC, or excuse me, another University of Tennessee receiver, or more just about Chris Brazel himself. Where are you at with Chris Brazel?
This one, I really want to know where you're at, because all that's on my timeline is Chris Brazel stuff. It's just, it's not the same. This guy is different. You can't helmet scout. It's a different player. I'm just going to start at the end. My comparison is not the best, okay, as far as what you want to hear, as far as what I think he could be at the next level. But the role in which this player occupied, I mean, we were talking about picking him up off of waivers at moments of time during his career in Green Bay, but I think he's like a Marquez Valdez-Scantling. I think that's what you want him to do. I know it feels nasty, but I'm trying to come with some more realistic stuff this year. Instead of he's Will Fuller or he's going to be this, if he's MVS out the gate, like that would probably be pretty successful right away. It's not what you want to hear is high end ceiling. He's a vertical deep play guy. I think some of the stuff, his out routes are good down the field. I think he can run some different things for his size. Has nothing to do with his ball skills or his play, but some of my concerns, everyone just excuses away the just walking off the line of scrimmage when the ball doesn't come his way. They say they just coach him to do that, right? So if you've been coached to just not give a damn when the ball's not coming your way, that just flips when you get to the next level. I don't know. I've just been burned by these kind of guys. A lot of that production came against Georgia. Awesome tape versus Georgia. I mean, he went bananas in that game. I don't think physical coverage, he deals well with that. And I don't think he's going to be put in a position where he's winning quickly off the line in one-on-one scenarios to be, again, a true difference maker. He just feels like the type of profile that comes around every single year, and it's supposed to be different and different and different, and then it's the same, the same, the same.
Yeah, I share some of the same concerns here. I sort of taglined it at the end of his reception perception profile, where he is an obvious blend of red flags and high end upside. Like, the upside is very obvious if it hits. The red flags are also very, very obvious. Like, if you followed my work over the last few years, and I'm going to have a post on the site about this, like breaking this down more in full. Also, it's in his RP profile, but he is one of these guys that is lined up last year. Lined up on the right outside receiver position on 95.5% of the snaps that I charted. That is a huge red flag. There is not a lot of NFL hits of guys that I've charted that have been on the same outside receiver position for over 70% of their snaps. Like, I've charted 35 players prior to this class. There's like four real hits. And it's like Drake London, Rashee Rice, Juju Smith-Schuster, DJ Moore. And Rice and Juju kicked into the slot. This guy's not kicking into the slot. He's much more of the guys that have just been like the busts of the busts that have been on this list before. You know, like the Josh Doxtons. His former University of Tennessee product, Cedric Tillman, is one of the guys that's like, that's an okay outcome on that list. They're guys that did absolutely nothing. Tillman at least has had some moments. Brazel, I think, is very different from Tillman in that he is another guy that is very loose, very fluid. You see this a lot during draft season, Ray, where you mentioned like you're seeing the clips on the timeline. I guarantee you've seen that out route that he ran against Georgia 100 times.
Yes.
Same thing with Jordan Tyson too, where it's like people keep showing the same 10 routes and it's like, hey, you're gonna tell me this guy's not the wide receiver? Yeah, there are 95 other routes that I could put up against her. It's like, right, he didn't do any of that stuff that you just showed me doing. Anyways, not a consistent player. Brazel, though, I will give him credit, though, he is good on those out routes and the dig routes, whereas like most Tennessee receivers is very straight line. But also, this is a guy that got arrested in August of this past year for driving on a suspended license, failure to appear in court. So like, that's something to consider with his profile as well. So yeah, just obvious upside here. He's 6'4". He's kind of lean, a little under 200 pounds. I think he attacks and plays the ball well in the air. So could he eventually be like a sacrificial X receiver, Ray? That's what you said in MVS. Like he was that type of player. I think he's got better ball skills than MVS, but it's just
yes.
The question I think we have to answer here, Ray, with Chris Brazel is like, how early can he contribute? Because he's coming from this very stripped down offense. That's the question here.
And if it's and here's the reality, the realistic answer to that. If it's not early, people will not care very long in fantasy football. Okay, we're not talking about the development of your favorite team's player. If it's not early, you will move on. You know why? Because he's probably not going to have enough capital where you got to be stuck with him, and there'll be somebody else on waivers, Matt, that you would rather have. So to answer that question, if you can't tell me that it's going to happen early for Chris Brazel, then I'm with you. The development, and I saw on your reception perception chart, I think 20% was the high mark on his route tree of percentages, which was the go route. 20%, nine route. I just did a study, Matt. I'm going to release it in a 5-part series about some NFL correlation to that route not being what you want your player doing, like all the time, right? I'll leave it at that. That's one of that ain't the route you want your dominant receiver running majority of the time. Just did some a study on the routes and what that ain't the one you want to see with the high percentage mark, and it aligns and it's yellow, right? It's not that it's bad. I'm just telling, that ain't what you want, right? And it's interesting to see that be the high mark on route percentages.
Got to diversify the route tree. You can't sacrificial X receiver. As we said, that's the whole part of the theory there, because a lot of those sacrificial guys, Ray, are the ones that are running those go routes. So we are going into our last break of the show, and that is going to do it for us here on the Yahoo Sports Network. However, we're going to keep going on YouTube because we have our Omar Cooper Jr. breakdown. So if you're with us on YouTube, we'll see you right after this quick break. All right, we're back. If on the other side of the break we were talking about, you know, kind of the old school sacrificial X receivers, the guy we're going to talk about here is a completely different archetype of player. It is Omar Cooper Jr., who is much more in line, I think, with some of the modern, more productive NFL receivers, as we'll kind of break down here in a second. But Ray, I will toss Omar Cooper Jr. to you like this. I'll admit that the first like 3 games I charted of this guy, I was like, I don't know if I really see it. It's another one of these kind of slot create a touch guys. But to me, his game really grew on me a lot the more and more that I watched. The reception perception charting data turned out better and better the more games that were added to it. So kind of talk me through your view of Cooper and just where you're at with him relative to a player that I think is going to go pretty high in the draft based on some of the big draft excitement. You know, the NFL Network, ESPN, the draft analysts over there are very excited about him, which usually means, hey, this guy's going to go high. Plus, he's been on like a bajillion top 30 visits, which just don't mean everything. Could mean a lot of different things. But I think people are excited about Omar Cooper Jr. Are you excited about Omar Cooper Jr.?
I like Omar Cooper Jr. a lot. Liked him early. He's got this game that you appreciate, right? Because he is good over the middle of the field. He's tough. You see some of the, Fernando Mendoza isn't sort of Mendoza without Omar Cooper Jr., that final drive versus Penn State and just the incredible catch that he made. And I can say this, and I think this is a testament to all of those guys. There are times where you're like, is he even the best receiver on the team? Because they've got Charlie Becker and then you've got Elijah Surratt. But when called upon, Omar Cooper Jr. Did his job, and he did it effectively, and he's got a game that feels like an NFL game. Would I say that typically he looks like and profiles the same way as Jordan Addison and even Quentin Johnston coming out, right? He's a bigger, fat, athletic kind of specimen type, and Cooper's a much better athlete than people give him credit for, but maybe not, but he absolutely has worked his way into being the type of player that an NFL team said, you know what, that guy fits my offense. And I don't give a damn what y'all think about where he can play, how much we paid to get him. He fits a need. And you know what? Those type of players typically get opportunity right away. The guys that everybody recognized, they kind of fit a specific thing. The team drafted him to do that thing, so he should come in and at least get a chance to do that pretty early, given all the steam that he's gotten of late.
Oh, yeah, I think he's going to. That's one of the reasons I think he has gotten so much steam, is that when you watch him play, you can just see, like, it's very easy to apply his skill set to an NFL offense. Because even if he doesn't develop a lick, even if he doesn't become a good route runner, he doesn't become a good separator, I know I can put the guy, put the football in that guy's hands. He's going to break tackles and he's going to make plays in the open field. Like, it's the way that, like, Khalil Shakir is used in Buffalo. It's the way that, like, the Bears used Luther Burden at times last year, where, okay, we just have you come on the field for some package of plays and we get the football in your hands and you really roll after the catch. I actually think there are some prospect similarities in my charting data for Omar Cooper Jr. and Luther Burden, actually. So I think there's some kind of overlap there, especially with how successful they are on outbreaking routes, which, by the way, is going to come up here in just a moment when Omar hops on the show and we play our interview from earlier this week where we talked about out routes. So stay tuned for that if you are watching the show. But yeah, some similarities there. And I think that's why, Ray, in a league where it's looking for big plays right now in the yards after catch phase, I think that's why he's gotten so much pop. Like, these Shanahan coaching trees, a lot of those guys are the ones bringing him in for interviews and getting excited about him. I think that there's a reason for that. So obviously, before I throw back to you, just everybody knows I chart routes, the whole deal, whatever. There's a lot more that I chart at reception perception, including in space attempts, like how often they're making plays, how often they get an opportunity to make plays with the ball in their hands in the open field, trying to really quantify, like, yards after catch and tackle breaking. So Cooper was in space on 53% of the catches that I charted. Just a total nightmare to deal with in the open field. He went down on first contact on 34.8% of those plays in space. He broke multiple tackles on 34.8% of those plays in space. So you're telling me this is a guy who is going to go down on first contact as often as he is breaking 2+ tackles, making field flipping plays? Yeah, that's a guy that I understand why people see that and get pretty excited.
You just nailed it, right? He could fit just about anything. And even if he doesn't get better, which he should, and he will, right? He should and he will get better. Like, that dude is ready made for an NFL offense. And if I told you, and I'm going to give you my comparison for Omar Cooper, all right? Omar Cooper Jr. I'll give you my comparison, and I am talking about this player high-end, okay? High-end comparison. 107 receptions on 159 targets, 1,220 yards, and 7 touchdowns. I'm a little bit older, Matt, so my brain goes back to the guys that I saw, right? Their maturation from college to the NFL. That's Steve Smith. Yeah. Pro Bowl wide receiver, not Steve Smith Jr. of the Carolina Panthers and the Baltimore Ravens. USC turned New York Giants Steve Smith. He put up that stat line in 2009. And when I watched those guys, when I watched them play football, where they win, how they operate, I was like, oh, he looks like Steve Smith. Hey, this is Steve Smith couldn't stay healthy, right? Omar Cooper Jr., we knock on wood. We wish him more like a healthy version of that. I'm not saying he's a 107 reception guy a year, but the same way people didn't think Wandale Robinson could be a primary, which we are about to see that happen this year, I think there's a world, given the draft capital and opportunity that Cooper's probably going to get, where if you looked up and you're like, damn, this dude's like the Jarvis Landry of his offense, and he may not be the flashiest or the sexiest, but he's getting 140 targets a year. I like Omar Cooper Jr. a lot.
Yeah, that Jarvis Landry kind of archetype is, I think, where he fits in. I think he's got a little bit better potential against man coverage than Jarvis did. But yeah, I forgot Steve Smith, the other Steve Smith, who, by the way, was drafted in 2007. Let's just say your boy was not charting routes in 2007. Okay, let's just say that.
I was covering five routes games in 2007, Matt.
Well, I'll tell you what, your boy was also not in the weight class in 2007 to be covering routes, covering routes, charting routes, any of that stuff was not happening for me in 2007. Anyways, played five games his rookie year, 8 catches for 63 yards, Giants Steve Smith in 2007. Oh. Talk about that in Dynasty now. People would be like, this guy stinks. He'll never do anything. But yeah, by year three, starts 15 games, played 16, 107 catches, 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns, as you mentioned. So he was definitely a guy by year 3 really took off. So, yeah, there's, again, so much appeal to Cooper's game. I think he is better against man coverage than credited. Really knows how to settle down against zone, which is nice. Only kind of concerns on him on field, and then I want you to talk about his breakout age, because it is a little bit of a red flag. Yeah. I know that, but two things just on field. Press coverage, not ideal. I don't think he works. I don't think he's got the twitch, the looseness against press coverage. Maybe could refine the technique, but probably not a huge deal, Ray, because I imagine he's going to be a Z slot receiver, won't deal with press as much. So it's not a huge problem, but definitely a weakness for him. Also struggles to like throttle down on stop routes and curl routes. That's one of his weaker points. Although I will tell this story because it's not on our interview, Ray, but this is after the interview, because it took forever for his thing to upload. He actually sat back and talked with us for like 10 minutes, me and Colin and JB and Jung and the producers and everything. And he actually asked about what was his worst graded route in reception perception. I was talking about, curls and the stops. And he's like, that's actually what I'm working on. It's what I'm working on. It's exactly what I know my weakness is, and I'm working on that. So it's good to hear that he's aware of his weak points. Definitely, I think that's another reason people really like him, is that he is, by all accounts, a great dude. Character reports are really high on him. So somebody who's going to work at this, which I think is good. But talk to me a little bit about the breakout age, which I know is a concern for a player like this.
Yeah, I think you have to. When I'm looking at all the guys, that like, he is by far the highest rated one in the Trinity, but the oldest one as well. Like, his breakout age at 21 years old. Like, you start going down the board. Next up is like Jeremy Bernard, who I don't feel great about. And then it's Chris Bell, who I love, but all the other issues there. It factors in. I think the bigger question, it wouldn't be as much as the breakout age, because he wasn't overly productive his first 2 years, is a question that people have asked. How much of his success was him versus Fernando Mendoza coming in, being surrounded by another highly touted player in Elijah Surratt? And I know Becker didn't have the volume that those other two guys had, but he still had almost 700 receiving yards in that offense. How much of it was that scheme? And in college, to be fair, you can out-scheme your opponents quite easily. Like, yeah, if you've got a quarterback and a dope scheme, you should probably be pretty good in college football. Like, I think maybe some of that is questionable, but I still think, to the things that you look at, right, usage aside, there is enough talent there that where if he gets the capital, I think his opportunity will give him a chance to succeed. He's a good player. He's still a good player.
Yeah, we do sometimes see with those slot receivers in an RPO-heavy offense like this, where because college football, the hashes are bigger, the field is different, they just have a lot more space to operate with. I do think Cooper shows an ability to read leverage and be in the right places that I think makes you feel that slot receiver production is not BS. There's some receivers we're going to be talking about on the next show where I think some of their production is a little bit BS. I don't think that is the case with Cooper, but it is something to note, like the later breakout age, the usage in that offense. Those are some of the things that keep him from being, to me, on the first tier of prospects in this class, but somebody that I think teams are going to be really excited about. And from a fantasy standpoint, if he lands in the right spot, Ray, I can see him being a big time rookie draft riser.
Yep.
Ray, agreed. We covered 7 prospects on this one. I think we couldn't have possibly done more in depth on these guys. Tons to get into, though, for our part 2. But in the meantime, we're going to let you go here. Tell the people where they can find your work, where they can find the Trinity, so they can dive deeper into these wide receiver prospects.
Yeah, just check the timeline today at RayGQ on X. I'm dropping an article about just usage, Trinity, NFL, RayGQ YouTube channel, and right here on Yahoo, man, every single Thursday. Pull up, Matt and I enjoy this. Matt, this was fun. Appreciate y'all tapping in. I hope y'all enjoyed this one.
I think the people really enjoyed this one, and I think they will enjoy part 2 of our wide receiver prospect preview, which will be next Thursday as we dive deeper into this deep wide receiver class. However, for now, we're going to say goodbye to Ray, and we're going to toss to our interview with Omar Cooper Jr. that I teased earlier. Really good conversation with Omar. I think you guys are going to really enjoy that. Let's take a listen to that right now. Very excited to be joined now by one of the top wide receiver prospects in this year's NFL draft. It is Omar Cooper Jr. out of the University of Indiana. Omar, what's going on, man?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
Man, I'm good. Probably not as busy as you. You know, it's a busy time for us trying to cover the NFL draft. I imagine for you, you've got a ton going on. Walk us through the pre-draft process. How are things going?
The pre-draft process has been fun. Starting with the combine, you know, being able to live out a lifelong dream, being able to do some of the drills, and then also being able to meet some of the coaches. Didn't know about that part of it, and then also with the medical and everything. And then after the draft, you got Zooms, and then you got top 30 visits. So I've been to a few teams so far. I got a few more scheduled later in April or at the beginning of April, and then got a few more Zooms left.
I'm not going to ask you to, you know, spill any secrets here on the show. I wouldn't put you in that position, but any team meetings kind of stand out to you so far? Any visits that you've really enjoyed?
Honestly, I've enjoyed all of them. I mean, just because it's a blessing to even be in this position. So just being able to go out there and see the facilities, meet the coaches, and just people that's on the staff has been really cool. But there's obviously some teams that I feel like you can tell really like you, and then there's some that you aren't sure because they're pretty good at hiding it. So definitely just excited to see what holds in the future.
Is there any, like I said, any team that really stood out? Like, oh, that went pretty well, actually. You know, sometimes when you do like a job interview, you're like, nah, I don't know if that went pretty well, but that one went pretty well. Anything kind of stand out in that regard?
I went to three teams so far. I feel like the Denver Broncos and the Philadelphia Eagles, those kind of, I feel like I did really good. And was a good time. I would definitely say the third team, I went to the Browns. That one was a little bit more difficult. So I don't really necessarily know how they feel about it. But it was still a good visit, though.
All right, well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. A few of those teams certainly need some help at the wide receiver position. Speaking of the wide receiver position, one of my specialties, my focus, is a series I do called Reception Perception, where I go in and watch you guys on film, chart the routes, really try to get the full picture of what you guys are doing on film and try to present that to the listeners, the viewers, the subscribers, the whole deal. So wide receiver is kind of my wheelhouse here. So I'm excited to break this down with you because, like I said, you're one of the guys that the more I watched of you, Omar, the more I really appreciated your game and what you're able to bring to the table. One thing I noticed obviously stands out right away: you played a ton in the slot this past year. That's not always been the case, though. Is there like a preference for you of where you like to line up, which position you like to play at?
Honestly, no, I wouldn't say it's a preference. I like to play both. Don't want to stick myself in a box. So I like to be versatile, move around.
What are some of the advantages, though, if you get to play in that slot receiver position more so maybe than playing perimeter, boundary X, and everything like that?
I would say some advantages playing in a slot is, I mean, you get a lot more free access. So don't really got to deal with press as much. And then there's a lot more room, kind of with the same, not dealing with press. And so just being able to read the coverages and find the open zones and the open spots in the coverages, it just helps a lot.
Yeah, that's one thing that definitely, if you're going to be a big-time slot receiver as you were this past year and likely will be in the NFL, you've got to really diagnose zone coverage. I think everybody does go through it differently, though. Can you kind of walk us through, like, what's your process in terms of being a zone beater?
So my process is, first I'm looking at the guy over me, just seeing his eyes, his leverage, seeing like just from watching film, seeing what he's doing, and he kind of is giving it away or not. And then obviously I look at the safety, the near high safety, seeing what he's doing, seeing how he's moving. And then if I have time as well, I like to just peek at the corner, because the corner also will tell you more than like the safety. So I like to go nickel, safety, then if I have time, corner.
I like that. That's really good. Yeah, that's something like I said, the more games I watched of yours, I'm like, man, this guy really is reading things out well from a zone coverage standpoint. And like right now in the league, Omar, the vast majority of NFL defenses are very zone based. It's a lot of split safety stuff, which for a guy like you and your skill set, it's going to give you a lot of room in the middle of the field to transition then to like a yards after catch player. And that's something, again, that really stands out. Tons of missed tackles. You're great with the ball in your hands. Again, from a process standpoint, do you have, like, how do you approach being a ball carrier?
So like my mindset going into it is, I mean, you always want to get positive yards. So always want to, if I'm getting tackled by the first person, I always want to at least lean forward. I don't want to go backwards. So, just the mindset is always just go positive. I mean, and then obviously just after that, it's natural. You just making moves or giving them a stiff arm, just depending on the angle of the defender. So I always just want to make sure I'm getting vertical and getting as many positive yards as I can.
Yeah, and that stands out, like I said, consistently watching you. Here's the thing, though. Like, we're talking about, okay, playing from the slot, being a zone beater. I know it's not like our dads. Well, I'm much older than you, so, you know, maybe like whatever. Maybe back in my day when I was watching football growing up, it's not our dad's NFL, right, where you're getting crushed over the middle of the field necessarily consistently. That being said, man, I was charting your film against Illinois earlier this season. I was charting it last night. Yeah. And, man, you run this in-breaking route and just get smacked over the middle. Like, you are a tough-as-hell man. I will give you a ton of credit there. Like, when you bring that attitude to the field, like, what does that do for you and for the teammates as well?
I would say, I mean, for me, it's really just a mindset thing. So, like, that hit specifically, like, I'm breaking in. I see the safety, so I know he about to drive because we ran this play earlier on him, and I got, like, 30 yards maybe. And so I seen it. I knew he was going to come. And so after that, you got to get up fast. You can't let the defenders know, okay, they hit you. So you just got really just mindset thing. You got to get up fast. And then for the teammates, it just shows like, okay, this guy tough. He willing to take a hit for the team just to catch the ball, get some positive yards for us. So I feel like it just helps the team like truly see who you are and what you're doing to help the team win.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's got to just – it's got to jack everybody up, you know, in addition to you just being like, hey, listen, I'm going to do my job. I'm going to get things done here. That was super impressive to watch. So again, the main thing that I do for Reception Perceptions, I create these route graphics from charting the film and kind of judging, okay, which routes are they best on? So I've got my notes up here. I'm putting out your chart next week. This show will be out by then, so people will have seen it. But I'm going to ask you, what do you think, what is your favorite route to run? Which route do you think you're best on? And I'm going to compare it to my notes here to see if I'm right.
I would say if I gave you two routes, my first one would be like what we call a bench or an Oki. A bench is like a 10-yard out. An Oki is like a 12 to 15. And then if I had to give you another one, it would probably be like a cross, like a deep cross.
Incredible stuff here, Omar. Like I said, man, your out route is easily what I would have said is the best one. Like, you've got a great understanding of like working leverage at the top of that thing, you know, especially against man coverage too. Like, we're talking about, okay, yeah, you're a slot receiver, you're working zone coverage, but you are no slouch against man coverage when you get those outbreakers. Walk us through kind of like when you're running an out route against man coverage, like how do you create that separation there?
So, I mean, you really just want to attack the DB's leverage. So if the DB's outside leverage, you got an outbreaker, you can't let them stay outside. So you either got to get to the middle of them and then give them something at the top to make them think you're going in or going deep and then speed cut it out. Or say if he's inside leverage or even head up, you want to keep him there so that after that, you can just beat them with speed. So, again, I really just like to attack the leverage and just try to keep them where they're at or make sure I get the leverage that I need to be successful on that route.
Yeah, no question. And like I said, there's a lot of reps on film that I've charted of you doing exactly that. So really impressive work by you there. And that's how we're creating those big plays now. You know, third down, you know, where it's man coverage, play action, you're able to get those sail routes off play action. Like there's a lot of big play potential there. I think we'll be seeing a lot of Omar Cooper Jr. doing that at the NFL level. I want to talk real quickly about a couple of your teammates here before we get rolling. Give me a scouting report on Elijah Surratt, the other Indiana receiver in the draft here, because he's somebody I've worked on a good bit as well. Give me kind of your scouting report on Elijah.
I would say bigger receiver, does a really good job at using his body. Wide body frame, don't really have any weaknesses. And you just gotta just make sure you stay in front of them. You can't let them get behind you. Can't let them beat you deep.
Yeah. Tough player to guard at the catch point. He knows how to use that size well. He's a guy, again, the more I've watched of him, he's another really smart receiver against zone coverage, particularly on some of those dig routes over the middle of the field. So I feel like you guys complement each other really well. You did this past year. You're great on I mean, you guys are good at multiple different routes, but you're really good on those outbreaking routes. He's really good at working over the middle of the field, like a very complementary duo you guys had there last year.
Yes, sir, for sure. I feel like with both of us on the field, it just made each other better. And just like the brotherhood that we made the past 2 years is kind of what helped us both continue to grow and get better as receivers, because we always pushed each other, held each other accountable, and made sure none of us was becoming lackadaisical or satisfied with what we had, what success we've had.
Obviously, you guys had a pretty good quarterback throwing you the football as well. Fernando Mendoza likely going first overall in the NFL draft to the Raiders. What can Raiders fans expect out of Fernando? What can we as NFL fans expect to see from him? What makes him so special as a quarterback?
I would say, I mean, kind of just what you see on the interviews. Just he always a smiley guy. He always laughing. He's going to be the one that's going to bring the light to the room. He's a real down-to-earth guy. He's going to talk to everybody, be friends with everybody. And just that type of person you don't come across a lot, especially like with his height and just the name that he has right now. And then also just someone who's going to come in trying to work every day, find a way to get better. And I say that's something that he really showed me a lot and that I kind of took from him, is how he just a perfectionist. Even if it's a good route, he want to find a way to, I mean, not a good route. Even if it's a good ball or anything that he does, he want to find a way to still get better. Even if it was, quote, if it was perfect, he's still going to ask, okay, what could I have done better to make it even better? So he's going to always find a way to work harder and just push himself.
Yeah, and the authenticity, it's good to hear that you feel that that's who he is, man, because that's just like, we need more good personalities in the league, right? Like doing stuff like this, interviews, getting you guys out there. So it's really cool to hear that he is just exactly who he says he is.
Yes, he is, for sure.
All right. Last thing I've got for you here, Omar, and I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you taking time out of a busy piece of the calendar for you. One of my favorite parts of the pre-draft process is just letting the listeners, the viewers, kind of getting to know you guys as human beings, you know, right? Like numbers, beyond the numbers on the spreadsheet, beyond watching you guys make plays on the football field, putting up fantasy points or whatever. I like to get to know, again, something about you guys beyond just that. Like, tell the people out there, what is something about Omar Cooper Jr. as a person that you'd like NFL fans to know?
I'm a believer and servant of my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So that's like the most important thing to me. And honestly, I would say, I mean, just like y'all, we human. We like to joke around, have fun. I mean, if you was to come up to me in public and I would smile, take a picture, have a conversation, and kind of like Fernando, like I'm a real down-to-earth guy. I don't think I'm better than anybody. Just because of where I'm at, we all got different paths. So I'm always going to be willing to give back to the fans and give back to anybody who's out there supporting me. And so, we always love the support and just grateful for everything that I have been blessed with.
Well, that's one thing we love about this show is being able to connect with you guys. And yeah, again, not just numbers on a spreadsheet. These are real human beings out there living their dreams. And it's been exciting to see you do that. Omar, appreciate the time, man. Good luck the next month. And really excited to see you get drafted here, man. Appreciate your time.
No problem. Thank you for having me. It was a good time talking.
Awesome conversation with Omar Cooper Jr. Good hang. Officially can say Omar Cooper Jr. Good hang. Good conversation with him. You can see why teams are pretty excited to talk to him. I think one team in particular is going to be very excited to draft him here in this month. Yes, later this month's NFL draft. Very awesome stuff, TA. Great show with Ray Garvin. And we have part two, of course, of our wide receiver preview coming up next week, 1 week from today here on Thursday. But we've got a ton going on before that, because on Monday, Mock Draft Monday returns with Yahoo's own Charles McDonald. Join me to break down him and Nate's latest mock draft and give us five of his favorite player to team fits from that most recent mock draft, plus his player that he's willing to stand on the table for in the 2026 NFL draft class. And on Tuesday, Justin Boone is back as we look for the teams that will shape the draft. Those who are thirsty at the skill position players, who's looking for some running back, wide receiver, and tight end help that we can change up our fantasy rankings after that. Tons of shows coming up over the next week. Until then, we are out.